Today we want to look at devoted like Daniel. In Ezekiel 14, two times he mentions by name three men. Three men who apparently, at the time that Ezekiel was living, had been the three most righteous men that had ever lived. He specifically names Noah and Job and Daniel. And God praises those three men. But he also warns everyone else that even those righteous men, things had gotten so bad that even those three righteous men would not be able to save their own families. Now that's an interesting thing because Noah saved his family on the ark. But the situation in Israel had gotten so bad, and of course they were already in captivity at the time Ezekiel's saying this, but he said, it's so bad. He said, look, it's so bad. Even if Noah was here, he wouldn't even be able to save his family. That's pretty bad. And he says, you know what? Even Daniel. That as righteous as Daniel is, as devoted to God as Daniel is, and remember, Ezekiel and Daniel lived at the same time, so Daniel was well known to the people that Ezekiel was writing to and talking to. He said, even Daniel, he couldn't save anybody else. Of course, that's one of the wonderful things about our Lord Jesus. He was able to save others. These men, they couldn't save anybody else. They could do what was right, but they couldn't save others like Jesus can. But we want to be devoted like Daniel. Wouldn't it be great if God were writing something like what Ezekiel had to say at that time? Wouldn't it be great for your name or my name to be mentioned as one of those three that was known by God to be righteous? Daniel's a great example to us, and we need to be devoted to God like Daniel. To be devoted to God like Daniel, we need some things. We're going to look at seven things. We're not going to spend a lot of time on each one, but we're going to look at seven things that we need to do or learn or be in order to be devoted like Daniel. And so the first is, to be devoted like Daniel, we need to learn God's law and train our consciences. Sometimes we forget that our conscience can be trained. We just assume that we were born with it and it teaches us what we need to know, and that's all there is to it. But no, consciences can change over time. They can be trained for righteousness, or they can be seared with a hot iron. They can become defiled and corrupted. And so we need to learn God's law and use it to train our consciences to do what is right. In Daniel chapter 1, verses 1 through 8, we find out about Daniel. We meet him for the first time. And this was in the third year of Jehoiakim, the king of Judah. Nebuchadnezzar, the king of Babylon. Didn't those guys have great names back then? I mean, I would have loved to have named my kid Nebuchadnezzar. I mean, that's just, you call him Chad for short, but you know, you have that great background name. But Jehoiakim and Nebuchadnezzar, and they're kings of enemy countries. But Nebuchadnezzar, the king of Babylon, came to Jerusalem and he besieged it. And God gave him up. God let Nebuchadnezzar. In fact, he had prophesied to Hezekiah several decades earlier, hey, this is what's going to happen. But Hezekiah was like, ah, it's okay. As long as it doesn't happen in my time. As long as it doesn't happen to me. But Babylon came. And they took the vessels of the house of God and brought them to the land of Shinar, that's where Babylon was, and they took them into the house of their gods and placed the vessels of the treasury in the house of his god. And then he commanded his chief servant, his chief eunuch, his name was Ashpenaz, another great name, and he said, I want you to go back and bring some of the people of Israel from the royal family and the nobility, young ones without blemish, of good appearance and skillful, with all wisdom and with knowledge and understanding and learning. and competent to stand in the king's palace and to be able, so we can teach them the literature and the language of the Chaldeans or the Babylonians. Chaldeans were another name for the Babylonians. So he said, we want to teach them our history, our literature, our language. We want to get some young people and we want to brainwash them. That's what he really said. We want them to be our servants and to teach them and train them. And we want them to be smart and we want them to be handsome and we want them to be perfect. And we're going to train them up the way we want them to go. And so that's what they did. The king gave them a portion of food from his own table, the food the king ate. That's pretty special. I mean, you went from being captured in battle to now you're getting to eat the king's food. That's a big step up. You were probably eating something not very pleasant just a few days before when the city was under siege. You can read other places in the Bible about some of the things people ate when they were under siege. It was not pretty. On one occasion, two women agreed to cook one of their babies and eat it. Another occasion, they would eat a donkey's head or dove's dung. When they got hungry, they ate some nasty things. And now they're eating the king's food. These special young people that were chosen. And they were educated for 3 years. And at the end of that time, they were to stand before the king. And among these people that were chosen, these young people, there are four. You'll recognize probably immediately one of these names. The other three you may not recognize. The first is Daniel. And then there's Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. Now you know those other three guys, you just don't recognize their names. Because when they got to Babylon, all four of them had their names changed. Daniel's name was changed to Belshazzar. The other three were changed to Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. So they changed their names to give them Chaldean names, to give them Babylonian names. But we know these guys. It's interesting, we know Daniel by his name Daniel. We don't know him as Belshazzar. But the other three, we don't know them by their Hebrew names. We know them by their Babylonian names. And that's what Daniel calls them even from this point on when he refers to them. Verse 8 is the important verse as we understand where Daniel is. Here's a young man taken from his country, taken to a foreign country, offered the wonderful foods that the king eats, offered an education for free, offered wonderful things. But verse 8 tells us something about Daniel. You know, a lot of young people would be swayed by that. But Daniel determined that he would not defile himself with the king's food. Now you got to understand, the Jews, of course, we know, had a very strict diet that they were to eat of. We call it today kosher. And yet they had certain foods they couldn't eat. Probably a lot of foods that some of us ate this morning, ham or bacon or sausage. They couldn't eat those things. There are a lot of things on that list that they couldn't eat. The king of Babylon could care less about that. So there's a good chance that a lot of his food involved some things that as a faithful Jew trying to keep the law of Moses, Daniel could not eat without defiling himself. He determined he was not going to do that. And he also wasn't going to defile himself with the wine that he drank. So he asked the chief of the eunuchs to allow him not to defile himself. He actually asked him, just bring me vegetables. He became a vegetarian, maybe even a vegan. They didn't have names like that back then. But he said, just bring me vegetables and water. And the guy gave in to it. He said, okay, I'll give you a chance. He's like, you know, if you don't look good, the king's going to be upset. He said, don't worry about it. He said, just let us try it for a little while, and if it doesn't work, then, you know, we'll take the blame for that. But it did work. They wound up being the best of the crop. And I have a feeling God had a hand in that as well, certainly. But if we're going to be devoted like Daniel, we've got to learn God's law. Now, we're not under that law of Moses. We don't have to worry about those food recommendations and things like that. But there are a lot of things in our world today that are out there to defile us. And we've got to refuse to allow ourselves to be defiled by the things of this world. We've got to train our consciences to recognize what's good and what's bad. But then we've also got to give God the credit He deserves. If we're going to be devoted like Daniel, we can't take the credit for ourselves. We've got to give that credit to God. In Daniel chapter 1 and verse 20, it says, "In every matter of wisdom and understanding about which the king asked, he found them," and this is Daniel and Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, "he found them 10 times better than all the magicians and enchanters that were in all his kingdom." Now, that might, if we were in that circumstance, we might get to thinking pretty highly of ourselves, you think? I mean, not just better, I'm 10 times better than those guys. You think there would be a temptation to be a little arrogant? To be a little uppity? Maybe just a little bit. Have a little pride at least. Hey, I knew the answers to all the king's questions. Yeah, I'm doing good. But Daniel, on the other hand, in chapter 2 and verse 27 through 30, this is later on, but we see the attitude that he had, which was not one of boastfulness and pride. On this occasion, the king called them, he'd had a dream, and Daniel explains to him, "No wise men or enchanters or magicians or astrologers can show the king the mystery the king has asked." Now remember, in this occasion, the king had said, "If you don't tell me about my dream," because see, the way that always works, you know, you call the psychic hotline, and the first thing they say is, "What's your name? Like, how psychic are you?" Nebuchadnezzar knew that trick. Because the way dream interpretation worked is, well, you tell us the dream and then we'll tell you what the interpretation is. Nebuchadnezzar said, nah. You're really good. You tell me what the dream was. Daniel's right when he says none of these guys, magicians, sorcerers, astrologers, none of these wise men. Any of you want to take a guess at what I dreamed last night? I mean, I don't have any idea what you dreamed last night. We don't know that kind of stuff. But Nebuchadnezzar not only said, either you tell me what I dreamed and then tell me the interpretation of it, or I'm going to kill all of you. Daniel said, they can't tell you. That's not good news, is it? But then he explains, there is a God in heaven who reveals mysteries. He says, there is somebody who can tell you. It's not any of these guys, and it's not even me, really. But there is a God who can do this. And so he explains to Nebuchadnezzar that this dream and visions were given to the king for God giving him a message of what was going to happen. This was not unheard of. The same thing happened with Joseph and Pharaoh, didn't it? Pharaoh had the dreams. Joseph interpreted them. But Daniel explains to him, "As for me," verse 30, he says, "this mystery has been revealed to me not because of my wisdom that I have any more than any other living, but in order that the interpretation may be known to the king, so that you may know the thoughts of your mind." God has to reveal the thoughts of his mind to him. He doesn't even know his own thoughts. Well, if you'd had a dream like Nebuchadnezzar, you wouldn't have known your own thoughts either. You wouldn't have known what that meant. He had some odd dreams. If you read throughout the book of Daniel, Nebuchadnezzar had some weird dreams, I'll tell you. But Daniel says, it's not because of me. It's not because I'm more wise than these other guys. But he said, if you give me some time, I'll pray to God and God will reveal this to you. We see that he was not arrogant. He gave God the credit. He didn't take it on himself. He could have. He could have said, yeah, you need to kill all those guys. They're fake. Look at me. I'm the real deal. I can tell you what you want to know. But he didn't do it that way. He wasn't the kind of person that he was. He gives God the credit that he deserves. But then if we're going to be devoted like Daniel, we're also going to have to be obedient to authority. That's really hard with this new hands-free driving law. Have any of you tried driving without your hands? It is really hard. Knees, elbows, they just don't work as well as hands for driving. But it is, even, I know, especially for a lot of our young people, that I mean, they're on those phones constantly, texting, talking, something. It's got to be tough. Put that thing down while you're driving. But we're going to be obedient to the authorities. We may not like all of the laws that the authorities pass. Daniel certainly didn't like all of the laws that Nebuchadnezzar passed, or later on Darius, or any of the other that he had to deal with that were in authority over him. But he was obedient to the authority. In Daniel chapter 4 and verse 19, Daniel, whose name was Belteshazzar, was dismayed for a while, and his thoughts alarmed him. The king said, Belteshazzar, don't let the dream or the interpretation alarm you. And he answered, my lord, may the dream be for those who hate you, and its interpretation for your enemies. Now remember, this is the guy, he's talking to Nebuchadnezzar. This is the guy who went and took him away from his family, kidnapped him, brought him to a foreign land, and tried to brainwash him into believing their beliefs. And yet he still says, and he's saying that because the message is a bad one, but he's saying, I wish this message was for your enemies and not for you. He was in subjection to that authority and obedient to it. In Daniel 5, verses 16 and 17, he's called out and he said, I've heard you can give interpretation and solve problems. Let this be known. And if you can, hey, I'll give you a purple chain, gold around your neck. I'll clothe you in purple and put a gold chain around your neck. I'll do all these things for you. You'll be third in the kingdom. Now, it's kind of confusing. Daniel's name is Belteshazzar with a T. This guy's name was Belshazzar without the T. So, but it can be a little confusing when you hear it, because sometimes we don't say that T real clearly, so it kind of sounds like they're the same person. But this guy was in a position of authority under Nebuchadnezzar. He was second in command, and he said, Daniel, if you do what I tell you, you can be third in command. Here's the humility of Daniel. He's obedient to the one that's in authority, but he doesn't want the rewards. He says, let your gifts be for yourself and give your rewards to someone else, but I will read the writing to the king and make known to him the interpretation. Of course, when he actually made it known, the guy really didn't have much to offer. He was fixing to die that night. So, you can keep your gifts. You know, I don't really want them. You're gonna die tonight. But then in Daniel 6 and verses 21 through 22, Daniel says to the king, this is the king, King Darius, who has thrown him in the lion's den. What would you have to say to the president if he had thrown you to the lions? Well, listen to what Daniel says to the king who threw him to the lions. O king, live forever. I'm thinking more like die right now would be what most of us would be thinking, right? But Daniel, look at the subjection to authority, his obedience and his submission. He says, my God sent his angel to shut the lion's mouths, and they have not harmed me, because I was found blameless before him and before you, O king. I have done no harm. Daniel was such an upstanding citizen that his claim, and validated, was he had broken no law. The king, of course, we know, he was tricked by some evil guys. And they got what was coming to them. But still, Daniel, he suffered wrongly at the hands of a king that he thought
liked him. And the king did like him. The king hated to do it, but, you know, he'd given his word. Kings are bad about, you know, well, I said I'd do it, and so even though it's the worst thing in the world, I guess I got to do it. Of course, sometimes I wish some of our politicians would keep their word a little better, like those kings back then did. They still needed to recognize when they had made the wrong decision, but they thought they knew it all, so they couldn't go back on their word for sure. We see that time and again throughout the Bible. But he had to be obedient to his authority, and we have to be obedient to the authority over us. We have to be in submission to it. We may not always agree with it. I'm sure Daniel didn't think, yes, please, throw me to the lions. No. But he still submitted to the authority of the one in charge. But then if we're going to be devoted like Daniel, we're going to have to give our best. Half-hearted efforts, just giving a little bit, is not going to do it. Daniel 6, verses 3 through 4, Daniel became distinguished above all the other high officials, because an excellent spirit was in him. The king planned to set him over the whole kingdom. I love this. Verse 4. The high officials and the satraps, which is, it's good that their name is satraps, because they like to set traps for Daniel. But they fail, but no, but satraps. Kind of like a governor of sorts. Because they sought to find a complaint against Daniel. They wanted to find some reason that he shouldn't be appointed to this position. They could not find any ground for complaint or any fault because he was faithful and no error or fault was found in him. Can you imagine if fellow employees where you work tried to find some fault to go to the boss about? You think they could find something? I'm sure with most of us they could find plenty. We don't live up to that standard, but Daniel, he had an excellent spirit within him. There was no fault. He was faithful in his duties. That's an amazing thing. Something for us to imitate without a doubt. And of course, we also mentioned Daniel 6, verses 21 and 22 already. Before you, O king, I have done no harm. He had done the king only good, no harm. Then if we're going to be devoted like Daniel, we're also going to have to pray without ceasing. It's easy for us sometimes to forget the power of prayer. Forget how important it is for us to constantly and continually go to the Lord for the strength that we need. Daniel chapter 2, verses 17 and 18. Daniel went to his house to make the matter known. This was when the king said, hey, you got to tell me my dream or we're going to kill you all. He went to tell Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, as we know them. And he told them to seek mercy from the God of heaven concerning this mystery, so Daniel and his companions might not be destroyed with the rest of the wise men of Babylon. So let's go pray about this. Let's seek mercy from God. In Daniel chapter 6, and verses 10 and 11, when Darius had signed the law saying, nobody prays to anybody except me. When Daniel knew that the document had been signed. Now we talked about submission and obedience to the authorities earlier. There are limits. And Daniel shows us. He didn't do anything wrong against the king by refusing to obey that unlawful order. When Daniel heard the document had been signed, he went to his house where he had windows in his upper chamber open toward Jerusalem. He got down on his knees three times a day and prayed and gave thanks before his God as he had done previously. Didn't change his actions, did it? Yeah, oh, they passed the law, you can't pray to God anymore. You know what? I need to go pray about that. That's what he did. Went right back to pray to God about it. And he prayed and he gave thanks before God. Of course, they came and they caught him doing that. And then, of course, he was thrown to the lions, but God protected him. In Daniel chapter 9, verses 4 and 5, Daniel says, I prayed to the Lord my God and made confession, saying, O Lord, the great and awesome God who keeps covenant and steadfast love with those who love him and keep his commandments. We have sinned and done wrong and acted wickedly and rebelled, turning aside from your commandments and rules. Now, that sounds kind of odd for a guy who no fault was found in him. You know, it's interesting sometimes. It seems like the more sinful someone is, the less willing to acknowledge their sinfulness they are. But the more righteous someone is, the more glaringly they see their faults. Now, I'm not talking about somebody who's self-righteous and a hypocrite, but someone who's truly got a heart for God examines themselves and sees just how far short of God's perfection they really are falling. Daniel is mentioned by God in Ezekiel as one of the three most righteous men in the world that the world has ever known. And Daniel says, oh. Now he's not just praying about himself. He's talking about the people as a whole. But he's included himself in this. He didn't say, hey, your people, they have done this and this and this, but not me. He said, we. We have sinned. We don't deserve you. It's a sad, sad thing. But it's so true. We could say this same prayer. We've sinned and done wrong and acted wickedly and rebelled, turning aside from your commandments and rules. We've done it. We all have. But will we admit it? Will we confess it? The Bible tells us that the Lord is faithful and just, but he's also going to forgive those who will confess to him. Sometimes we're so afraid to admit we were wrong. We're afraid to confess our faults. He's not going to forgive us if we refuse to confess. He says, oh, I'm pretty good. I don't have anything I need to confess. Well, if you don't have anything to confess, then I guess there's nothing for him to forgive. Doesn't work very well, does it? Because without his forgiveness, we're all doomed. Well, the sixth thing we want to notice, if we're going to be devoted like Daniel, is that we need to obey God rather than man. This is a continual theme, and we saw this already. That even though he was in subjection to his government, he obeyed them in every area where he could. If they asked him to violate God's law, he said no. When they tried to give him food that was not what God's law had told him he could eat, he said, I'm not going to do that. When they told him, hey, pray to the king and not to your God, he said, I'm not going to do that. In Daniel 6:5, they said, these men, remember they were trying to find a fault with him? They couldn't find one. Here's what they finally figured out. We're not going to find any ground for a complaint against Daniel unless we find it in connection with the law of his God. They knew that he was faithful to the king and obeyed the king, but they also knew he loved God more than the king. And he was going to be more faithful to God than to the king. And so they figured it out. And so they set the trap for him. And that one seemed to work. They probably thought it had worked pretty well until the king went back to the lion's den and Daniel was still there. And then they thought, oh well, we'll try something else.
until the king said, "Bring those guys." Threw them in there. It's fascinating. The Bible says the lions gobbled them up before they even hit the ground. Now some people say, well, the lions just didn't eat Daniel because they weren't hungry. Now they were hungry. They gobbled those other guys up before they hit the ground. But he obeyed God rather than man, and God spared him. Now, does that mean that if we'll obey God, God will always spare us from harm? No. Absolutely not. Nobody obeyed God more than Jesus. God didn't keep him from dying. In fact, that was the plan, was for him to die. We see other faithful people like Stephen and James in the New Testament who, they died, they were killed, even though they were being obedient to God. Then in Daniel 6, verses 10 and 11, again, when Daniel knew that document had been signed, don't pray, what did he do? He went and prayed. And he just prayed right there by the window. He wasn't even trying to hide it. You know, we'd say, well, let's, you know, we'll keep praying to God, but let's hide it and pretend we're not, so nobody will see us doing it. Daniel didn't care who saw him. He was going to pray to God. He was going to obey God. But then finally, if we're going to be devoted like Daniel, we're going to have to put God above material rewards. This is a tough one in our society. Our society is based so much on material possessions and wealth. It's hard. It is so easy to give in to money and physical material rewards. Especially difficult if we're struggling and we have that, oh, hey, if you just do this. How many people give in to criminal activities because, well, you know, we can make a little extra money? Daniel chapter 2 and verse 48. The king gave Daniel high honors and many great gifts and made him ruler over the whole province of Babylon and chief prefect over all the wise men of Babylon. Do you think that corrupted him? Certainly corrupted a lot of people in time past, hasn't it? A lot of people have been corrupted by being put in positions of power and authority. But Daniel wasn't corrupted by that, because he put God first above the rewards and honors and gifts that he was given. In Daniel 5, 16 and 17, he's called, I've heard you can give the interpretation and solve problems. Read this writing, make it known to me. Give you the purple clothing, give you the gold chain around your neck, make you third in the kingdom. Daniel said, you can keep them. Keep those gifts. That's not what I'm all about. That's not what I'm interested in. That's not the kind of honor that I'm wanting. I want honor from God, not from man, not material rewards and blessings. But he still read the message. Not a very nice message. You have been weighed and found to come up a little bit short, basically. Found wanting, the King James says. But you've been weighed, measured, and you just don't measure up. That's what his message for King Belshazzar was. Daniel is a good example for us. He was a wonderful man who served God with his whole heart. Did he sin? I'm sure he did. It's not exactly recorded what sinful thing he might have done in his life. I'm sure he failed at some point along the line. But oh, he lived a faithful life. Now he started when he was young. And it's important for us to teach the young people, because it's so much easier to do what's right from the beginning than to try to turn a life around later on and then get it right.
and, you know, go back all those mistakes that we've made. It's so much easier to do it right from the start. But that doesn't mean that if we haven't lived right up to this point, we should, well, I'll never be like Daniel. I didn't live right from the start. No, we can still live right. We can still become like Daniel. If you're here and you have a need to respond to God's invitation, maybe you need to be more like Daniel. Maybe you need to learn God's law and train your conscience. Maybe you need to give God the credit He deserves. Maybe you need to be more obedient to authority, whether it's the authority of the elders in the church, maybe it's children being obedient to their parents, maybe it's being obedient to the governing authorities, whatever it might be. Maybe you need to repent of giving half-hearted service and give your best. Maybe you haven't been praying like you should, and you need to follow Daniel's example of praying without ceasing. Perhaps you need to determine that you're going to obey God rather than men, and that you're going to put God above material rewards. Whatever your need may be, please come as we stand and sing.